Isabella Amansack, ISABELLAAMANSEC. Today is May 22nd, 2018, and we are located at the United Women of East Africa Community Center in City Heights. And today I am here with...
My name is Meshate Mengistu. It's M-E-S-H-A-T-E, last name Mengistu, M-E-N-G-I-S-T-U. My date of birth, huh? Okay. 08-12-1987. I was born in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, which is the capital of Ethiopia.
So we'll go right into the question.
Sure.
If you have a hometown, can you describe it for me?
A hometown? Okay. From Ethiopia, I directly arrived to San Diego, and I've never really been anywhere else, so I would describe San Diego as being my hometown, not specifically any area, but I did grow up between City Heights, so I guess City Heights would be the area, but the city would be San Diego.
Can you describe what your childhood home was like?
My home... Well, there was quite a few. We moved around quite often. So I don't remember, like, a stable place where I stayed a long period of time. Can you describe what your childhood was? I mean, it was... So I came here when I was 9. And then at 11 years old, my dad had really bad diabetes, and he ended up going blind. So after that, it was just kind of downhill. So that's the reason we moved to City Heights, because we were evicted from our house because he wasn't able to obviously like provide for us as he was before. So I don't remember having like a specific place here in San Diego, but when I was back home, we had a house with my mom, and that's where we lived from the time I was born to the time we came to the States.
You remember, what were your neighbors like, or what was your community like, and what type of backgrounds do you like know of in your area, and how did you navigate your community?
Okay, so a majority of the time that I spent was in City Heights, so the neighborhood is obviously very diverse, and I grew up with a lot of Hispanics, and class background, I mean, majority of them were low-income families. I think at one point we were living next to like a crack dealer type of person. That was after my dad got, you know, sick and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say it was the nicest place, but after that we moved around to Bernardo, which was a complete different life. So seeing the two different worlds made me realize a lot of things, because I think growing up in City Heights, I just saw one way of living. Like, I mean, since we are immigrants and foreigners, we're expected to act a certain way. So obviously I knew I would have to have good grades and go to college, but I never looked at my situation as like me being poor or whatever until I went to Rancho Bernardo, I guess. Not that I was poor, but that I was not as fortunate as other kids were, you know? Like, I had friends who had Louis Vuitton purses and every color and stuff like that, and I'm just like, this is so weird, like, what the hell, how did this life happen, you know? So I live between two different worlds, I guess, between those times.
So can you tell me a little bit more about like Rancho Bernardo and like your community there, and like how it was like growing up?
It was nice. It was very, very pretty. Like, it was, because I was, so a majority of the time I spent my time taking care of my dad from the age of 11, and even there I would just completely go to school, and then after school I would come home and make him lunch and dinner and then all that. So being around kids that were, I guess, had a lot of material riches around them, it made me realize a lot of things. I don't know, like, it just changed my perspective on life. Like, I was just like, you don't realize the things you lack until you see what you lack. I don't know if that makes sense, you know? So when I saw them, like, I had friends who had, like, mansions with theaters in their house. Like, it was the weirdest, like, I mean, it was so weird. Like, I mean, it's crazy. I remember one of my friends, when she turned 16, her dad bought her a BMW, you know? So, I mean, yeah, it was nice. The place we were living at, they had, like, a community center, so we would swim all the time and play pool, and there was, like, you know, gym there, and there's a tennis court. I mean, it was completely different than here, you know? So, I mean, there were great people living there, and it was different. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's so weird now that I think about it, talking about it, because it's just completely from, like, this. It was a 180 change. So that's how I would say the community was. It was just nice and peaceful, and I was able to walk to my friend's house without worrying, and we would do certain things, like go to the movies on the weekends, where normally I wouldn't be able to do it here, because, you know, like, it's just a different socioeconomic, you know, situation. Even if I wasn't able to pay for myself, they would be able to pay for me, you know? So it was just different.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me about some of your favorite childhood memories?
Favorite? Okay, my favorite. I mean, when I was back home, I remember playing a lot. That was my favorite, playing around with my sister, with my friends. Coming here, I think when we first arrived to the States, because I have four older brothers, and that was cool, like, going on the plane, that was awesome, because it was a first-time experience. Just those things, I guess, I remember. But once we arrived here, like I said, because I had to take a role of a caretaker for my father, I don't really have a good grasp of something I could be like, oh, this was a great memory of my childhood, you know? So most of it is in Ethiopia, just playing around, being a kid, and just being with my mom, you know? Like, I don't know, just walking around. It's different, you know, there, like, you have the freedom and the independence to walk out of your house at 5 years old and go in your town and look around. Here, you are not able to do that. Plus, life circumstances are a little bit more different here.
So which area do you reside in now?
Right now, I live in El Cajon City. It's a completely different place than here, because I was in North Park a majority of, like, my, from 18 and up. So when I moved there, it was a different life. It was like moving to the countryside or something, you know? But later on, especially because I was, I guess, I act like I'm like 50 years old all the time. But at that time of my life, I kind of wanted to settle down and not, I guess, party as hard and stuff like that. So when I moved there, kind of forced me to change in a way, because I wasn't going to drive 20 minutes to hang out with my friends down here. You know what I mean? Like, no, ain't nobody got time for that. I'm just kidding. Yeah, so that's where I live now.
So if you're comfortable, would you be able to tell me your parents' names and your grandparents' names?
Sure. Okay, so my parents' name, my dad's name is Mulugeta, Mulugeta. And my mom, do you want the last name? No? Okay, so my mom's name is Lulit. It's Lulit. Grandparents, to be honest with you, I guess, like, my mom's dad's name is Kebede, Kebede. And then her mother's name is Yovdar. And I would not know how to spell that because I've never spelt it. Mm-hmm. But it's Yobde. Yobdara. Yobdar? No. You could try to figure it out. We can figure it out. Hold on. Let me help you out, because Yobdar. Okay, so it's Yobdar. Yobdar. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure.
So what do you remember most about your parents and grandparents when you were a child?
Parents, what I remember, my mom, she used to work a lot, because she was obviously the breadwinner of her six kids, so she worked a lot. That's what I remember. And just she just laughs a lot, and she just likes to have fun, and we would, like, she would come home at, like, 6 p.m., and we would, like, Ethiopian coffee. It's, like, a whole ceremony. So just that, and she would invite everybody in our neighborhood, you know, and like we would just dance and have fun. That's what I remember of my mom. My dad, I remember he was really funny but very stern. My grandparents, I actually lived with my grandmother, but I don't know my father's parents because they passed away before I was born. And my mother's father, he passed away as well before I was born. So, but my grandmother, she was just really nice, soft-spoken, and just nice like a grandma is, like, you know, very nice and just so generous and sweet. Yeah.
So, do you know your parents and grandparents? Do you know if your parents and grandparents have a different ethnicity?
No, we're all Ethiopian. I mean, maybe different. Yeah, just different maybe regions. I don't know ethnicity, but we're all from Ethiopia. I don't know if I would say different ethnicity, just different origins, like different. They're from different states within Ethiopia. You know what I mean? So yeah.
Do you know which states?
Yeah. So my mom is from Wello, and then my dad is from Gojam. So I would imagine their parents are from those specific. So they're like the countryside, and Addis Ababa is considered as the city, like the main capital city where like businesses and all that are. So that's it.
Thank you. So do you know what your grandparents or parents did or do for a living? Can you tell me about their educational levels?
Sure. My grandpa, I know my grandfather, my mom's dad owned a coffee field. I don't know what my dad's parents did. And I know my grandma on my mom's side was just a stay-at-home mom. And my mom was an assistant for a commerce company. And my dad was the manager of telecommunication. My mom, I think, discontinued her education at 8th grade. That's just a normal thing. And my dad, he went all the way to university. So he graduated. Mm-hmm.
So how did your parents meet? How did your grandparents meet?
So I wouldn't be able to tell you how my grandparents met because I've never talked about that, but I'll ask my mom next time because I'm now curious. But my parents, they were neighbors. And from what my mom told me, my dad was just a very funny, nice, generous guy. And she was just really beautiful. Cool. Yeah, she's very beautiful. So, but she's quite younger than him, like, so it was more of like a brother sister type of thing, you know, like where he would be like, oh, come eat with me or something like that. And then over time, like as she got older, it was kind of like, oh, you're very beautiful type of thing. And then one thing led to another, they got married and then had 6 kids. Yeah.
Okay, so what important lessons did you learn from your parents and or grandparents that you feel have impacted your growth and impact the way you live now?
I guess, you know, my fiancé said that for us to be where we are today is because, like, our parents were strong enough to survive whatever struggles that they faced. So I think for me, it's just that they, I'm sure they faced a lot of struggles, like, because my grandma, for example, had multiple kids, but they passed away either when they were babies or when she was giving birth, but it still continued on. And then my mom having faced struggles with her husband having to leave and then raising 6 kids, and then my dad having to escape, you know, for political reasons and walking for whatever amount of miles to escape and come to Sudan and then come to America. I guess it's taught me that life is not always easy. It's never easy, but I think just making the best of your situations and knowing that every situation might not be exactly how you would hope for it to be, but it's what's supposed to be at that moment, you know what I mean? And just being strong and enduring and persevering. Yeah.
Thank you. Do you have any siblings? If so, how many do you have? What are their names? What is your birth order?
Sure. I have 6 siblings. And the first one, his name is Kirubel, K-R-U-B-E-L. And then the second brother, his name is Isayas. It's E-C-E-C-E-S-Y-A-S, Isayas. And then the third boy is Ba'akal, but we'll call him BK because I'm not about to spell that. It's just BK. And then this third brother, or fourth brother, excuse me, is Brick, B-U-R-I-K. And then it's me, the fifth child. I already spelled my name. And then my younger sister is Miki, or Meklit, it's M-E-K-L-I-T. Yeah.
So where are your siblings living? What are their occupations?
Okay, so my brother, Kirabel, the oldest brother, lives here, and he works as in a parking in a Rady's hospital. And my younger sister lives here, and she works for a mortgage company in PB. I have many more. Okay, so I have... And then one of them lives in Atlanta. He works for Continental Hotel as a... something there, to be honest. I don't know what he does, but I know he, like, manages, like, very fancy catering stuff for, like, very rich people. And I have my other brother. He's a supervisor at Home Depot. And then the other brother, he works for Denver Airport. Mm-hmm. That's what they do.
So how are you and your siblings brought up? What type of discipline did you or your family practice?
Discipline. You know, because my brothers were older than us, they were more of the disciplinary part of our life, and plus because we left at such a young age. But I guess, like, my mom raised them, like, tough, like, you know, because she didn't have a man to make sure that they were obviously as men, like, they don't, you know. So she was tough on them, not on us, because we were little kids, but she was very tough, but at the same time, for a good reason. She just didn't want them to fall in bad company. But my family was very strict. They expect, obviously, like most foreigners, you know, they expect you to act in a certain way that you wouldn't ruin their reputation in any way, basically. But we were very afraid of our brothers, but not in a way where we're just like, oh, they're gonna, like, whoa, like, I don't know. It's more of like we loved them, so we never wanted to disrespect them, so we never did anything that would make them feel like we're not listening or we're not respecting them. So I don't remember really getting hit or anything like that. It's more of like they instilled fear in us already, like, you know, from birth. So it's kind of like we never, yeah, that would be what I would say was our way of discipline in our family.
So do you know the origin or history of your family name?
I don't know. No, I don't.
Okay. Does your family often talk about your family history? And if you're comfortable, can you describe and elaborate on it?
You know, that's a good question. We never talk about, like, our family history and stuff like that. No.
Do you have a spouse or partner? If so, how did you meet and or marry? What made you interested in them?
Great question. Just kidding. No, it's a great question. I'm not kidding. So, do you have us? I have us. I guess he's my fiancé, so he's my fiancé. We met at a bar in North Park. And because you know what's funny is because I always told myself I would never meet anybody at a bar, but ironically God works in mysterious ways, which is funny. What made me interested in him was that he was just a genuinely good person, you know, and I guess he's also Ethiopian, that helps a little, you know, but he was just, yeah, like he's just a really, really good person, very focused and just wise and very, very smart. So all those things, so many things. I could talk hours and hours.
So what occupation does your partner hold?
He's a loan processor for a mortgage company.
Do you have children? How many? What do they do? Do you talk to them about your history? If so, what do you tell them? If not, why not?
I don't have children, but I do have a stepdaughter. I guess she is my child in a sense. Do I tell them about history? Yeah, kind of, like when I was your age type of thing, you know? I was doing this. But not like where I would sit her down. I mean, we talk about like my dad was blind and how I would have to, because she's 10, by then I was already cooking, you know what I mean, not sitting on my iPad, but times have changed. So more like that. We just talk about, oh, like just family stuff, like what happened when you were a kid, like what were you like when you were 10, or so on and so forth. But not in a sense of I don't go in depth of my history. I don't even know my history as well as I should now that I see, you know. But yeah, that's about it.
Are you still in contact with your family in Ethiopia?
I mean, I have cousins and aunts, but not really. I came here at a very young age, so we don't have that connection that would make me feel like I need to call them. And I mean, I know they're doing well, and I know for the most part, you know, but how they're doing, what they're doing and stuff like that, but I don't go out of my way to call them. Plus, because, I mean, it's kind of a selfish act, but my immediate family is here, so it's more like my attention is on them, which is kind of sad, but, you know, life happens.
So what kind of schools did you attend? What level of education do you have?
Sure, what kind of school? So I attended Crawford and then Rancho Bernardo and then graduated from Claremont for high school. And then for middle school, I went to Monroe Clark, which is right here. And then for elementary, I went to Jackson, which is now Ifton, and then I went to, where did I go? Edison, and then I went to Central, I believe, after that. Many schools, I don't know why. And then after high school, I went to a community college, but it took me forever and a half to actually finish that part. Just life distractions, you know. But I went to San Diego State eventually and graduated with a health communication degree.
Mm-hmm. What were some memorable events or memories you had in school?
Memories of school? You know, like since I moved around so often, I don't really have like good memories. But because in Rancho Bernardo, I don't know why, but I have the fondest memories there. I don't know why, but I guess because like it was just chill. Like it was just a very easygoing school, plus my friends were just, I don't know, very nice people. And so I guess just having a good group of friends, just hanging out together, them coming over to my house and sleeping over, those are my memories of going to school. But when I was younger, no memories.
Why did you decide to choose your major?
Good question. So what happened was I wanted to do nursing because that's normally like every immigrant's dream here, either doctor, lawyer, or nurse for some reason. So that was main point. But then my dad was sick quite often, and I would end up at the hospital quite often as well. And my brother ended up getting sick around the same time as my dad. So I was constantly in the hospital, and I was just like, what the heck? Like, nah, like this is not gonna be my life either, you know what I mean? So I just sat at the computer one time and I was just like, something I can do within health without having to like be at a bedside, I guess, you know, but still make an impact on me somehow in someone's life. And so that's how I ended up coming to my major.
What was your experience like in school? What was your relationship with the teachers and other students?
So are you saying that in general?
I think in general,
yeah.
Maybe K-12 and college.
Okay, we could talk about college. Honestly, once I got to like San Diego State, it was more of like I need to complete it because it took me such a long time to actually make up my mind and take the initiative to move forward. So I didn't have relationships with teachers and students. I think at a university, it's a very fake relationship you build with people, at least in classes. Plus, I was older when I came in. If I was maybe 18, it would be a different situation. But a lot of the times people befriend you for notes or to kind of get through school. And then once, you know, you're done with that school, they don't even look at you or acknowledge you. You know what I'm saying? So teachers, no, I just went to class, did what I had to do, and leave. I didn't really have relationships, sadly, which is not good.
So are there any differences in teacher or student relationships from your place of birth versus the U.S.?
To be honest, I wouldn't know. I was too young to like give you a good answer for this one. I don't know.
If you remember like some of your school experience, what were the demographics of the student body at your different schools?
Okay, so a majority of my schools, I went to, so they were majority of City Heights. So obviously, like, Hispanics, Asians, Somalis, you know, Ethiopians, African Americans were a majority of the students that I was surrounded by until I went to Rancho Bernardo, which is actually surprisingly multi-ethnic in a sense of, like, there was Indian students and Persian students, which, I mean, it would be considered Asian, but all those Russians, Germans, and all these different ethnic backgrounds that I was not privy to before going to Rancho Bernardo, because here there's, like, specific ethnic backgrounds in City Heights in comparison to Rancho Bernardo. Yeah.
Do you participate in any activities outside the classroom? If so, where are they?
One time I tried to play soccer and my dad told me I'm gonna die, so he made me stop. That was the one thing I tried, and it was so much fun. But at the same time, now looking back, I'm like, okay, like, I could see why he felt like I shouldn't participate, because to him, it's like, their mom is not here, something happens, like, what's gonna happen type of thing. So that was what I participated in when I was in middle school, and then high school I did dance because I was safe. So that was what I did, like, modern jazz and tap and all that stuff, you know. Has it worked out? No. Okay, sorry, it's this one, huh? Careful.
So what were your plans after you graduated?
To be honest, when I graduated high school, there was nothing in my head of any plan, just because, one, nobody in my family graduated college, right? So, I mean, obviously you're gonna graduate high school, like, if you lost your mind, right? So, but after high school, I just didn't have a clear direction in my life, and it was just kind of dark and bleak, to be honest with you. But I just kept going forward, hoping that some way, somehow, God would reveal a purpose for me one way or another. And yeah, but as a young person, I was very lost, like, lost in a sense of the direction I was taking. I would go to school and do the best that I can, of course, but at the same time, I didn't have any, like, I didn't have an endpoint. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to do this, and then get to this type of thing, you know? Yeah.
How about after college?
After college, I mean, I had, at that time, I was old enough where I was kind of tired of living, you know, working and, you know, just the same old. And so, to be honest, I don't really have plans. I'm not the type of person to make plans. I'm not like, in 2 years, I'm going to do this, 3 years, I'm going to do this. I just feel like that's kind of too much, you know, like, I'm not organized in a sense of, like, my life should be a certain way. I just allow God to play his role in my life rather than taking that part. I mean, I do have hopes, right? Like, in a sense of, like, I always wanted to be in a long-term relationship at 27 and get engaged or married by 30, in which God is, ended up working, like, you know? So I don't really, I don't know where life is going to take me, but I'm allowing it to take me. Yeah.
So what kind of career did you want when you were a child? Has it worked out that way? If not, why not?
So when I was a kid, I wanted to be like a police officer, a firefighter. I don't know why I wanted to be those things, but those were the things. I don't know why. Like, when I was a kid, I would be like, I'm going to have multiple jobs. I don't know why. Like, I would be like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Da, da, da. But as you get older and, like, life circumstances, you know, like, they make life bleak. Like, I don't know how to explain it. As a young child, when you face, like, multiple traumas and all these situations, you don't have a clear sight of what you want to do. I don't remember, like, as I was getting older, like, when I was middle school or high school, thinking I wanted to do this. Sometimes I would think of, like, wanting to be a teacher, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, they don't pay enough. Like, you know, it's not enough money to, like, survive on. But, yeah, that would wrap that up.
Did you work while you attended school? Did you do?
Mm-hmm, I did. So when I was in community college, I did, you know, like, temporary jobs here and there. And then later on, I ended up getting into a school, Miguel Elementary, as a supervisor for their after-school program. And that's where I ended up, like, liking the job that I was doing, because before that I was working for Subway and it was horrible, horrible. And before that I actually worked for Charleroi and it was worse than that. It was not good. And so when I went into Miguel Elementary, it taught me a lot of things, how much I love kids, and they're just so adorable and innocent, and just, I looked forward to going there, you know. And so, and then after that, I ended up going to Harmonium Primetime. And then after that, I was working as a sub for the district. And then after that, I came here. So all the time, working and going to school. So that kind of gave me a sight of where I wanted to go. So that's a good one, yeah.
So what is your current job title and for what company or organization?
Okay, so I'm a community health organizer here at United Women's of East Africa.
Can you describe your typical work day? What is your working condition like?
On a daily, I mean, different things, replying to emails, writing emails, making, just organizing certain events. My work environment is wonderful. I have, like, amazing coworkers that I really do love. Like, they're just like family. So I love it here. It's a very comfortable place to come to, you know what I mean? It's not like other places where you feel any animosity or anything. Not that I've worked in places like that, thankfully. Oh, God knows. I would never work in a place like that. But I think here is a little different for me just because I'm able to do the things that I am hoping to pursue, I guess, later on. Because ultimately, but I want to see, like, how I can possibly be a health communication specialist. So it helps me gear my way towards that in one way or another, you know? It gives me a lot of opportunities to use what I've learned and also gain so much more along the way.
What languages do you speak? Do you speak a different language in different settings, such as home, school, or work?
So I only speak two, English and Amharic, which is an Ethiopian dialect. Do I speak different languages in different settings? I mean, when I'm at work, I speak English, but if a client that comes in who speaks Amharic, then I will speak Amharic. But I'm more used to speaking in English. It's just a normal thing for my mind. Mm-hmm.
So how does your family celebrate birthdays, funerals, or other special occasions?
Birthdays, so just the same as Americans, maybe just a little different. Instead of, like, yeah, popcorn, though, you know, like, or cake, or sometimes we might have, like, traditional bread, candles, and what else? Just the normal things, just a little bit different culturally, but now it's the same, like, you know, cake and happy birthdays, and that's it. And then funerals, ironically enough, that's why they're here, they're doing funeral, but Ethiopian funeral is very intense because you sit for a good 5 days and you mourn the person. There's people who come to, like, help you get through that time, and they bring food, water, tea, and they sit with you all day and they mourn with you. And then once the burial happens, you eat, you gather together, talk, like, you, they help you forget certain, you know, that thing happened. And weddings, I would say, are the biggest occasion within the Ethiopian, I mean, most foreign, foreign backgrounds. We have, like, huge weddings with, like, I mean, the least amount is, like, 400 people, so. I know, 400 people, girl, it's crazy.
Do you have any special family traditions, customs, songs, or food? How has your family created its own traditions and celebrations?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if we have traditions just because we've lived away from each other constantly, so we weren't able to make traditions like that. But as we're getting older and our family expanding, we're trying to find ways to come together. So I guess that would be our tradition now, where, like, we make the time and the effort to see each other at least once a year from wherever we're at. But, I mean, our custom is we laugh a lot and joke a lot, and it's more of, like, our closeness and just that. I don't know if we have, like, specific traditions that I can really speak of, yeah.
What kinds of traditions or celebrations do you or your family maintain for the ancestors, if you do? How has it changed in America?
I don't know what you mean by ancestors. Are you talking about, like, ancestor worship or type of thing? Or are you talking about just our traditions as Ethiopians?
I think if... Yeah, I guess, like, just, like, a general tradition that
okay.
you brought here.
Sure, okay. So our food, I would say, is something that we maintain. Our traditional clothing, celebrations, like, holidays... that we still celebrate and observe, those things, I would say. But, yeah, that's it.
What examples of holidays?
Sure. So we have New Year's. It's not the same as the American New Year. It's actually September 11th, ironically. And we have Easter, but it's a week after than the American Easter. Pasiga, and then Ganna. Which is Christmas, is actually January 7th instead of December 25th. So those things we still observe with, like, our traditional food, traditional clothing, and just certain customs we still continue on here.
Mm-hmm. Did your family practice religion when you were growing up? Are you religious now? Do you attend any religious service? What is the ethnic background of the people who participate, and what language is used in the religious service?
Oh, very, very in-depth. So I did grow up with, obviously, religious background. My family is Orthodox Christian. So do I still practice it? Not to the extent of which they do. There are certain things I don't particularly understand. They do, you know, so. But I did. I go there, and, I mean, I still attend to for certain things, like funerals or baptisms and stuff like that. The ethnic background is Ethiopian the majority of the time. Maybe a few, you know, Jamaicans may come, or Greeks or whatever, but the majority, it is an Ethiopian or Amharic, so it's Ethiopian. People.
What is your favorite comfort food? What is your favorite food related memory? Any recipes passed down in your family?
Good. Okay. My favorite comfort food. Oh, I have so many. Okay. I love food. Okay, like that's one of that's my what is it called? My weakness is food, girl. Yeah. As you get older too, you won't see. You gain weight, so you know, but anyways, my comfort food, is it my own, like Ethiopian food, or just generally speaking? Okay. I don't have specific one. Like, it just has to be really good food. Like, I just love good food with good ingredients that is made with love and time. That's my comfort food. Food-related memory. I mean, I guess me and my sister, when we were kids, we would sit on rainy days. Like, we would make my dad let us stay home when it would rain. And so we would make popcorns, like, a million times in one day and just sit and watch TV together. So, like, I don't know if popcorn would be considered food, but that would be my memory, like, a memory. And one time when I was a little girl, I was, like, 10, I think, or 9 maybe, I wanted popcorn, and all my family members were asleep, and I almost burned down the house. And my dad, he was just like, this girl is going to be the death of us. I was like, I'm sorry, I was hungry, and I want a popcorn. And, like, the whole kitchen was black. So that's my memory, popcorn. I don't know why that has... Yeah. And then one time when I was a kid, I like praying, so my neighbors... I love baking and cooking just in general. So I was like, oh, I'm going to make cake. So I made cake. And instead of, like, sugar, I put salt, like, a bunch of salt. Oh, no. And then gave it to my neighbors. Like, it was brownies. They were so mad. And the one time I gave them, like, laxative-made chocolate chip. I don't know why I was like that, but just moments like those, that's what I remember.
That's so funny.
I was a weird child. I had too much time on my hands. And recipes passed down from family. I mean, most Ethiopians have the same, like, recipes, I guess. You know, you hope. But just, like, traditional foods. I don't know if there's, like, specifics that my family specifically makes. It's more of traditional cuisines that you hope to pass down to your own kids. So that's what I would say for that one.
So how are manners different in your homesteading or native home versus normative culture in America?
I mean, I would say, like, just roles. There's roles that you have to play as a woman, a child, a father, a son, an elder, you know. I guess that would be the difference, that we're more of a collective community, like communal society. And so we definitely look to each other for whatever, like, reason as to why funerals, there's a huge amount of people that come and comfort you. Or, you know, on weddings, there's like 400 plus people that come. So I think that's the difference. And also, like, just the fact that we're okay with our roles and what we play within our families, you know, like a woman is expected to act a certain way or partake in certain chores. I think that's our culture and how we carry ourselves. A woman is not supposed to talk too loud, and she could be educated, of course, and, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with her going to work and stuff like that, but at the same time, carrying herself with a certain esteem, that she doesn't have to be so loud and, you know, crazy out there, you know. That's the different manners here within our own traditions. And I mean, with time it changes, like the normatives of home, because Addis Ababa is the capital, so it is very westernized. But I would say that the outskirts still carry on those traditions where, you know, people have their roles to play, which is probably the best way to live anyways. It makes life a lot more simpler that way.
What do you do for entertainment? And do you have any hobbies and what kind?
What do I do for entertainment right now? So we took out our TV, you know? I love people's reaction. It is the best. Yeah, so we made that decision, I want to say, almost 2 years ago now. So we took the TV out, and so we don't really, like, I don't watch, I guess, mainstream things. Because we used to spend a lot of time. I mean, in the beginning of my relationship with my fiancé, we spent a lot of time, you know, Netflixing and, like, you know, what is it? Hulu and, like, all that. Which, I mean, we spent a lot of great times together, no doubt, you know? But at the same time, as we were getting older and more in our relationship, we realized it was causing a lot more risk in our relationship. And not only because of that, because I think we wanted to, not I think, it's because we wanted to be more disciplined in the way that we led our lives, rather than complaining that we, you know, we want to see change in the world. We wanted to kind of be the change in the world. We don't want to perpetuate the same ideologies that the world, you know, carries on. And I wouldn't want my kids to be a certain way or act a certain way, just because I feel like, and the more you learn, you know, and not having the TV, that's not even what you asked me. But anyways, I mean, not having the TV made me realize how much, and the more I researched about TV and what was, you know, like the impact of TV on the human, you know, mind. And it's a huge impact that people, I think, don't realize. So it made me realize how impactful it is on the course of your life and what you choose to be and what you choose to do, you know, because I think a lot of times in the society we live in, especially in the Western world, we're taught that we are the way that we are because we are that way, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of the times there's a lot of influences that come into play and how you carry yourself and what life you lead, to be honest with you. And so I entertain myself with learning. Like, a lot of the times I learn, I watch documentaries, I try to read, I try to be better. Because I think one time as a kid, I remember saying, like, one of my fears in life is to live a life not living up to my potential as a person. You know what I'm saying? Because it would be such a shame to just live here and one day I'm old, you know, in my deathbed and wondering, what did I do with my life? And I don't want it to be that I sat in front of a TV all day, every day, and just gone to school and got my degree, but not, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how to explain it. I feel like I want to, one, I want to live a purposeful life, one, for God, and two, for myself and my kids, because I want them to be good, productive human beings one day when I'm not around. But that got intense. Okay. Do you have any hobbies? I do have hobbies. I like painting. It's my enjoyment. I mean, I don't do it as often. It's usually when I feel like it, because if it's a force, it just doesn't come out good. Arts and crafts. I just love things that my attention is on and I learn, and I like challenging myself. Like recently, so my best friend had a baby shower, and one thing they wanted to do was like make the giant flowers, and I've never made those before, and I was like, this should be too hard, you know? And so I started doing it, and it turned out amazing. I mean, thank God, you know, it's all his help anyways. But I was like, that's amazing. So, yeah, like, the older that I get, the more I feel like I have to challenge myself to do something different than what I'm used to, you know? Sometimes I do get lazy, I ain't gonna lie. Because, you know, that's just a human being. But those are my hobbies. And hanging out with my fiancé, hanging out with my family. I just love being around my family. They're my favorite people. And being around people just in general is, you know, great for the mind. Yeah.
Okay, so when did you leave your place of birth? How old were you? Did you want to leave? How long did the decision take?
Good. Okay. So I left Ethiopia at the age of 9, a month after I turned 9, actually. And how old were you? When did you leave your place? Oh, 1996. September 1996 is when we left. And I was 9 years old. Did I want to leave? Yes, because I hadn't met my dad. So my dad left when my sister was born. And I was probably like almost 2 years old when he left. So I was excited, girl. Like, I was so excited. I was like, I'm going to get to meet my dad. I've always had this idea of my dad. And I always just fantasized and thought about him so much. Like, oh, I'm like, why don't we have a dad? And I remember like kids making fun of us, you know, like, and I would cry to my mom and say like, we don't have a dad. And she would like pull out all these pictures and say, this is your dad, like, he's so great, da, 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 you know. So when we finally got the chance to go come here, he's the one who brought us to America. So when we were finally coming here, I was excited. One, it's America, you know. Two, I'm gonna get to see my dad. So I never thought of like the consequences of not seeing my mom later. Wow. Later is when it hit me. And how long did, so what happened was, it actually went by fast, but then a Somali family ended up stealing it and buying it off. So when we had already prepared to come here, they said, we're not going to be able to go because it's been, like, I guess the person who was working at the immigration center sold it to a family, a Somali family. And our chance was basically gone. So my mom, luckily, God is so good because she has a cousin in New York. He's a lawyer. And he fought and fought and fought. Finally, like, we got the chance back, you know, and whatever happened. I'm sure they're here, though, like, that family. So, yeah, it took us, I think, a year and a half. It didn't take too long.
Did the people around you know you were leaving? If so, how did they treat you once they knew?
That's a good question. They changed, you know. Like, I think one of the things living in a very undeveloped, I wouldn't say undeveloped, but we were very obviously, like, low income, you know. Like, when my dad was around, there was a good amount of money, but my mom being the main breadwinner in our home, we were very, very, very poor. Like, I mean, there were nights we would sleep with just eating corn, and there were nights where, man, it was tough, you know what I'm saying? So for us to get that chance, I think, you know, like, I remember my aunt would, I mean, most of our family members looked down on us, you know what I mean? Because my mom had 6 kids, her husband left her. So when we got that chance, people definitely did change. But at the same time, being young, it never hit me until later on, you know. I'm like, oh, because I remember my aunt wouldn't let us sit on the couch, you know, would make us sit on the floor, me and my sister, but then her kids could sit on it, you know what I'm saying? So, but later, you know, as you get older, I think it changes. And I remember the day that we left, it was the weirdest thing because everybody in our area was like standing like we were celebrities, and we're like pulling our luggage and they're like, bye, bye. And like, it was just a bunch of people. And I'm like, what the heck? heck? You know, like, I'm little. Like, I'm really little. But I remember just looking at them, like, this is so weird. Like, why are you all here? But at the same time, that excitement of, like, getting to see my dad in the plane. But definitely, people will change. It's like winning a lottery. People around you, no matter who they are, they're going to change towards you. You know what I mean? Because it's, like, it's her opportunity, but it might be my opportunity, too, type of thing, you know? So, yeah.
What possessions did you bring with you, and why? Did you leave anything behind that you wish you couldn't take with you?
No, I didn't bring anything. I brought my brothers, my sister. But I didn't bring anything. Like, I don't remember. I mean, we didn't have much to bring anyway, so just maybe a few clothing, like, you know, stuff like that, but nothing that I would keep as a keepsake, just normally because I'm not that type of person. I don't think like, oh, I'm gonna miss this place, so let me even now I'm not like that. So as a kid, I wasn't like that either. Leaving my mom behind was tough. I mean, at that time it didn't hit me, like, I keep saying that, but it's later on you realize the impact of not having a mom, you know? So I guess that would be the toughest thing that I had left, and I wish I could have brought with me. Okay, so what was the journey like? The journey was good. It was in a plane, thankfully. We were not like, you know, other people who were in a refugee camp. Thank God. God is so good. I don't know if I could have survived that, because there are people who go through refugee camps, and Lord, yeah. But my dad went through all that, so we wouldn't have to, right? So, how much did it cost? It was $1,000 for each person, and it was through Catholic Charities. They're still around, actually. So they paid for us, because my dad was still being, you know, he wasn't established here yet. He was only here, I think, 3 years by then. And socially, I mean, it was weird, because you don't speak the language. It's a different country. It's, do you want to wait, or are you able to hear me? Okay, so, so, yeah, socially, I guess not knowing the language, it's different, you know, you have a different view of what America looks like when you're an undeveloped country, because that's just the view you're shown on TV. So when we came here, it was definitely very different, you know, and having just, we had such a different perception, like, than what we came to, you know? Like, we expected a house, but no, we came to an apartment that a bunch of different ethnic people were living in. That we were not, like, expecting that in our mind, you know what I mean? Just trash and homeless people. And culturally, I mean, you change, you know, as a person, because I didn't grow up around Ethiopian, so for me, it definitely changed. I didn't even speak the language until I was later, when I started hanging out with more Ethiopians, and I was, you know, they would challenge me, oh, you have to speak in your own language, and they're like, you're so white, and like, you know, because the way that I speak and stuff like that. And I mean, culturally, a lot is taken from you, but at the same time, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't go back and say, like, I wanted to live in Ethiopia, because, like I said, our circumstances were not that great. So I don't know if our circumstances later on would have changed, you know what I mean? But that's all in God's hands anyways, but that's my assumption. And method is, we came through the plane, by the plane. All six of us came, and my dad planned the journey. He went through the process of, like, you know, getting us to have the visa and passport, and my mom was endlessly working and paying money she didn't have to make sure that the visa and the passport, going to the embassy and asking questions. And then after, like, we found out the family, whoever, you know, took it and took our chance, her going through all that to make sure that we came here, you know what I mean? So it was quite interesting. How long was it? I think it took us a good 17 hours, I want to say, to come here. Yeah. So thankfully, no. My family, like, all my siblings came with me. Like I said, my mom didn't come. No, we didn't lose anyone, thankfully, because it was by plane that we came. So there was no bad thing, thank God. Yeah. Yeah.
them, did you already know English? If not, did you already know English and adjust to Denmark?
Okay. No, I didn't know English. And how did I adjust? What number is it? I'm sorry. Oh, okay. No, you're fine. So, I did not know English. And how did I learn? I think with time, we were young enough that we were able to just kind of, like, learn quick. And my dad doesn't play, so he would make us study. Like, we would go to school and then come home and he would just quiz us all the time. Like, what is this? What is this? Da, 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 da. You know? So, we learned it quick. I mean, my sister and I, for my older brothers, it was quite difficult because, I mean, they were adjusted to their own language, to their own culture, to their own lives. But, I mean, over time, obviously, they were young enough that they were able to also pick it up. But it took them long. It took us a good maybe 3-5 months to learn it. Yeah.
What did you expect when you got to America? What are your experiences in America? How are they different from your expectations?
Okay. I expected clean, like, streets. Clean streets. I didn't expect homeless people. And people always, like, so one time I actually went to this interview or, like, presentation, and I told them that when I came to America, one of the things that surprised me was seeing homeless people. And then she asked me if we didn't have homeless people. I'm like, I came from a third world country. You know what I mean? This is a first world country, so I didn't expect that. But yeah, that and just, it looked the same. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I just had an idea of, like, this heaven on earth or something. And when I came, I was like, oh, there's the sky, there's this ground, there is trash, there is people, there, you know what I mean? It's just, there happens to be a lot more people that don't look like myself. You know what I mean? But yeah, like, just that, like, oh man, it was completely different. But at the same time, obviously, like, over time you get used to it. What are your experiences in America? What, at present time? Okay. My experiences are not bad and they're not great because, I mean, obviously I'm a black woman in America with a very hard name. So it's not always easy, you know. I've, like, experienced quite a lot of things, and especially going to school because of what I look like and my name, there are a lot of things that pass me by in the sense of, you know, like, grades. I'll write a good paper, but I'll end up getting a B while someone else might get an A for a mediocre paper, you know what I'm saying? So those were my experiences, but at the same time, I had great experiences because, you know, I grew up with a dad who was blind, and we didn't have a lot of money. So, I mean, economically, we wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for government assistance and Section 8, you know. So, because of those reasons, I do appreciate it. But at the same time, it taught me how to work harder just because I was the one who had to fill out the forms and so on and so forth. So, that taught me a lot of things, being in America, just the lack of I guess, like, systematic racism and just the pushback that you have from growing, especially when you're in government assistance, you know what I mean? There's no way that you can grow economically or educationally because there's just so many hurdles that you have to run through to make sure that you're able to pay for rent, you know what I'm saying? How are they different from expectations? I mean, like I said, it's just for the first one, just coming here and seeing what I saw. That was, you know, my expectation of America was obviously our just heaven. Yeah.
What were some of the hopes you had for yourself and for your family when you first arrived? Have you realized these hopes?
What are some of the hopes you had for yourself? I mean, I was young, so I don't remember having hopes and dreams. I was just hoping to see my dad, but I mean, I guess, like, because later on, my brothers had to leave us, so that was really tough. I was not expecting that to happen, so that was tough to experience, and obviously, like, my dad being sick, that was definitely, like, obviously, as a little kid, as a person, just in general, you don't think, like, such a misfortune would happen, but with everything, God has a purpose, so over time, obviously, you learn a lot of things, and it taught me quite a lot of things. It made me who I am today, so, yeah.
What were some challenges you experienced in starting a new life?
I guess language would be one. Two, just getting used to the place and the country, and just people making fun of you, and you know, just it was just different. It's so uncomfortable to be somewhere, you know, and like you're forced to get used to it, especially as a kid, because you're put in a classroom with a bunch of kids that you don't know what they're saying. It's like gibberish. So you're just like, what? But then like you want to act like you know, because you don't want someone to be like, oh, she's whatever, and the people ignoring you and not wanting to talk to you or just looking at you with disgust, like you're just some weird creature. And I'm just like, I'm a human being, you know. So yeah, that's yeah. That was my what were the challenge? That was my challenge. That's it.
How do you feel about the decision of coming to the U.S. today? Do you miss anything about your life in your place of birth?
I mean, it was a great choice. You know what? I want to say that, but at the same time, I don't know what life would have been like if I had stayed, you know? Maybe God would have made things work out and our life would have been different, you know? So I don't regret coming to America. One, because it wasn't my decision. Too, because I mean, it taught me quite a lot of things. I mean, I don't know. I mean, either or, I think we would have faced the struggles we face anyways. You know what I'm saying? So, I feel okay with it. I mean, I am who I am because of those things. Me coming to the States and all that. And do I miss anything about Ethiopia? No. I mean, I miss the country. Like, I miss my birthplace, obviously. Like, there's a certain comfort level that I feel when I'm in Ethiopia in comparison to here. It's just different, you know? And I don't know if anybody else would say any different. But other than that, I mean, we have food. We have the cultural clothing. I can always get stuff sent to me. So, you know, like, there's nothing I miss. No. Yeah, just the place.
In what city and state did you first settle in? Why? Did your family settle in the same place or move around? How did you come to live in Southern California? Why do you live where you live now?
So we first came to San Diego, and that's where we've been. I mean, like, at least myself, my sister, we've never moved around. We came here 20 plus years ago now, and we've never moved, and we've settled in the same place, and the decision to come to San Diego or Southern California was because my dad was already residing here, so obviously, like, it would be the ideal place for us to come. Why do you live where you live now? I live where I live now because it's San Diego.
How did you find housing? Who helped you find it if you were helped?
So I believe, like I said, because Catholic Charities were the ones who helped my dad, so I would imagine they were also the ones who helped him find a home for us, and that's all I know, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who helped your... Okay. Have you experienced or encountered racism in your neighborhood, in school, or in the workplace? What was... experience?
I mean, as a little girl growing up with Hispanic kids, yes, of course, you know. I think it's a natural thing for kids to feel either superior or inferior to someone that does not look like them, you know what I'm saying? So they're gonna always either look at you in disgust or look at you like some type of way, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I never allowed it to obviously get to me, because I was just like, who are you? Get out of my face type of thing. But at the same time, definitely, like, there was definitely racism, especially when you're in a low-income place. And like I said, we were economically very unfortunate, I guess. So I didn't have the new clothes. And, I had responsibilities at a very young age. So my mind wasn't on things like that a teenager or a young person would pay attention to. And thankfully, and I'm very happy about that. So... I definitely did experience racism with kids. I don't think I've ever really, I mean, yes, I actually did with like a teacher. I remember, I don't know if it's racism. I think it's people have this assumption that when you come from a different country that you're not as intelligent or capable as, you know, certain people. So I think that just the challenges of just, excelling and meeting your own expectation and exceeding theirs. You know, that's what I learned. And I remember one of my English teachers, he was just like Mr. Pataki. I will never forget him. I remember how he looks in my head. He had like red face with like this blonde red hair. It was like a receding. I remember him. If I saw him now, I might still remember him. But he was just so mean. Like, oh my gosh, he was just mean. Like, I remember him criticizing how I rode. And I mean, I was in middle school, seventh grade. You know what I mean? Like, take a chill pill, dude. I just came 3 years ago, okay? And so he had this just mean look on his face. And he was just like, you're never going to go anywhere type of thing, you know? And I remember in high school, this counselor told me that I wouldn't be anyone, like, basically.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I was just like, I remember him, too. I don't remember his name, but I remember he was this bald guy who just, white, bald guy. And I was going to Rentschbrenner at this time, and it's a really, really hard school. Like, when I say hard, I mean, like, it's intense. It's a preparatory school for a university, so it's, like, it's intense. So I wasn't doing as good as I, you know, as my other, you know, Crawford or San Diego Unified or like this area, you know. So I remember him like, you need to put more effort, da, da, da. And I'm thinking in my head like, you don't know what I'm going through in my own life that you would, you know what I mean? You don't even know me. That was the first time we ever even met, you know. And he was just so rude and just mean, and I was just like, ew, like, oh my gosh, like, I just, he took a lot out of me at that moment. I was like, okay. And I think moments like that, it's hot, like, it just kind of made my, like, my idea and my hopes, because I think teachers make such a great impact on your life, you know. Good teachers can really change the path of a child, you know. So, and counselors and whoever works at a school can definitely change a child. So I've encountered great teachers, but those few bad ones definitely impacted me on a greater level than the good ones, you know. Mm-hmm. Racism at work, no. I have great relationships with most people that I work with. Thank God, you know. I've never really experienced, I mean, like, normal, like, workplace stuff. Like, you know, HR sucks and, you know, bosses might suck. But nothing that I would say was, like, considered racism or anything like that, yeah.
Does being a woman of color affect how you act in different settings, such as homeschool or work? Does it affect how you're treated in the different settings?
What number is that one? I'm sorry. Oh, this one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, I work in a very ethnically aware place right now, so I don't really feel like it affects me in any way. I mean, I guess maybe if I go to certain meetings or whatever, but that's also why I work where I work, because that is definitely our hope, is that we would bring forward our who we are culturally and ethnically, so that we can make differences for those who might not have the voice or the ability to come to what we, you know, come to, or the meetings that we get to attend. So no.
Did you expect America to be so racially diverse? How did you think the different groups get along?
I mean, I was young, so I don't really remember having any ideas of, like, the diverse racial groups. But how do I think they get along? I mean, you know, everybody keeps with their own. But because, obviously, situations bring you together, you're going to be cordial to one another. You're going to be kind to one another. I think human beings are all the same at the end of the day. Might have different backgrounds and different ethnic backgrounds and might eat maybe different types of foods, but at the end of the day, we just kind of want to be respected and be dignified and be treated with dignity. And so I think that's how I hope we treat one another, no matter how different we are.
How do you identify yourself in American society?
How do I what? How do I
identify yourself?
I'm Ethiopian. I'm Ethiopian, and that's what I am. That's how I identify myself.
Mm-hmm. Do you have funny or memorable experiences of culture shock?
Funny. I don't remember any culture shocks, to be honest with you. I don't have specific ones. I mean, like I said, just seeing homeless people in trash. yeah.
Are there differences in gender roles for those living in Ethiopia versus America? What do you think of these differences? How has it affected you?
Yeah, of course there are differences. I mean, you know, there are expectations for a woman and a man, and I think that's actually I mean, I don't know if it's like my background, but I feel like people need to have roles in order to know what roles they play. It makes sense to the mind. It's a lot easier to conceptualize life that way rather than, so yes, we have roles that we play, but at the same time, I think we also take up different roles. If the father is not around, the mother is going to take on different roles, you know. But like I said, because we're a communal family, even if the father is not around, the uncle might take that position, you know. But yeah, we definitely have roles, and I think that's a great thing that America can learn from us.
Are there differences in how society treats those who identify as LGBTQ in Ethiopia?
Oh, I'm like, but Ben, no. No, I'm good. No, yeah, of course. There's a difference. It's not accepted. It's not accepted at all, period. And it's a very religiously conscious country that feels like it is not, you know, and within our, I mean, to each his own, you know what I mean? You keep your private life to yourself. I don't think anybody cares in that way, but I think out and about, like it is in the States, it wouldn't be allowed. Maybe one day it will be, just because that's where it seems like it's going everywhere anyways. But it's definitely not accepted. I mean, America is, I think, overly progressive when it comes to certain things, yeah.
Would you be comfortable in disclosing this part?
Sure, yeah, that's perfectly fine.
What is your citizenship status? Are you a citizen by birth or not?
Naturalization.
If by naturalization, how old were you when you became a citizen? Why did you decide to become a citizen? How do you feel about this?
Okay, so I am a citizen, and yeah, I'm a citizen, and I was naturalized by birth of naturalization. If by naturalization, okay, so I was 14, and my dad was the one who took the test, and then we automatically, you know, since we're under 18, my sister and I automatically became citizens, so there was no test that we had to take, thankfully. And how did I feel about this? I didn't really think about it, because I was actually 16. I mean, I think it's a good thing, and it's not a bad thing. I think when you've been somewhere for such a long time, it's just better that way. And we can always do dual citizenship. I can always be an Ethiopian citizen, so it doesn't really take anything away from me. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel strongly or have any opinion about the political parties?
Do I have opinions? I mean, I have opinions. Are they strong? I don't know. I don't really, like I said, I don't really pay attention to, I feel like it's a waste of my time to spend so much of my energy and things that I can pay attention to rather than political parties that I think a lot of the times we feel like we can bring about change, but I think it's a very socially, like, it's a very capitalistic society that we live in. And if you don't have the money and if you don't have the wisdom and the knowledge like they do, and because they have a platform that we might not have, it's not always easy to have an opinion. At least for myself, I don't feel like I have to have an opinion, because regardless of what my opinions might be or my thoughts might be on political parties, it doesn't really matter. We still have Democrats and Republicans, and nothing else is known. I think most people don't even know that there's other parties, right? So, yeah, that's my opinion.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts about America's current political climate?
That's a good question. So I know a lot of people tend to have a lot of opinions about political at least the state of our politics at this moment in time. But like I said, I feel like, you know, I think it's Aristotle that says we're all actors in the stage of life, right? So I think there's certain roles that we all play, and I feel like politicians play a certain role. And I feel like, though I know people feel and put so much emphasis on who and what Trump is not the only one that makes that decision of who stays and who goes. You know, there's a multitude amount of people that make that decision. He's just one person, you know. Do I hate him or dislike him as a person? No, because I know that he's playing his role and whatever, you know, choices is made behind him. You know what I'm saying? So he's just the front man, but there's so many others behind him. Yeah.
this space, and how did you become involved?
Okay, so actually I had, I guess we could call her friend, that used to work here, and she was the one who got me to come and interview for this job, and that's how I ended up getting involved, to be honest with you. I wasn't well aware of it until I came for the interview and got involved, obviously, as an employee, and I mean, it's an amazing opportunity that I am so thankful for to have, because it definitely shows me quite a lot, and it challenges my way of thinking, you know what I'm saying, because you're put in situations that you wouldn't otherwise choose, because, like I said, we go to different meetings and so on and so forth, and I have very strong opinions or ideas of, you know, like, things, and so when I'm put in certain situations, it definitely challenges me to look at the world in a different way than maybe what I might look at it, you know? And so it helps me to broaden my horizon and grow as a person. So it's a great space. I went way too deep with that. Okay, I always do. Sorry.
It's okay. How do you plan to see the space grow and impact the community?
I mean, I hope that we grow, obviously, with more people with different backgrounds, in a sense of, like, East Africans. I hope that we grow in a sense of, I know, like, a lot of us want to do mental health awareness and just growing as a community and as an organization that impacts our community for the better, you know what I mean? So, especially as we're getting, you know, bigger and most of us are trying to grow career-wise, I hope that the organization also grows along with us. Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite event, program, experience in the space, and can you describe it for me?
My favorite is Mondays, because we have Girl Scouts, and, like, there's little girls that come, and I love, like, kids and, like, just adorable. So, yeah, that's my favorite. Like, there's different things. I mean, there's a lot of, like, events that we definitely have and host here. There was, like, a open mic for Urban Beats. And that was a cool experience, because just, I was like, dang, it's getting lively up in here. Okay, you know? So that was awesome experience to see, and just how many people just want to get involved, the different programs, the different events that we have, is just, it allows us to have people here, and then it allows us to be known by the community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
How do you make the space accessible and promoted to other people in the community?
I think word of mouth, and we have posters and just different things. They come here and ask us questions, and there's different organizations that know about us and what we offer, so that they give them a heads up and they might come here.
Mm-hmm. Have you yourself made programs? What did the programs entail, and how did it pack?
I myself have never made programs, but I do run certain programs, and we do, like, once a month dialogue with the doctors. So we have a doctor that comes in and talks with the women, so it's basically a preventative source for women, preventative and also informative, in a way of, like, if they want to know about health issues or chronic diseases, different things. So that's the program that I'm most in tune with. And also, like, with Dunia, we have an initiative, a collaborative initiative that we do with Dunia, which is FGC awareness for medical students. So we do that too. So that's what we do. Sorry, I'm getting late. I'm, like, tiring out.
Are you involved in other East African organizations? If so, which ones? How did you hear about these organizations? What programs do these orgs offer?
I want to say yes, but no. I'm mostly here, and we do the Southern Sudanese. We do tutoring, and we collab with them in UCSD, obviously, to offer the tutoring. So that's how I'm involved with that, but nothing specific. Like, I don't have specific organizations, East African organizations, that I'm a part of that I would say I'm as a part of it as I am here. This is where I come. This is, you know, my focus a lot of the times.
So we're onto the community then.
Sure.
What changes have you seen in the East African population in America, San Diego, California, City Heights?
Changes. I mean, there's a lot more East Africans. I mean, like, a lot more East Africans, but it's also, like, a lot of them are educated, and a lot of them that came around that time, obviously, are not as in need of us as, like, the older population, I guess, that, and City Heights. I mean, there's just a huge influx of East Africans, and that's the only change I've seen.
What are some difficulties different generations face when communicating or getting along with each other?
Sure. Difficulties? I mean, generations, just intergenerational, you know. There's not a good communication just because I don't think they feel like they understand them. There's different battles that kids have to face here in the States, you know. There's a certain way that your parents want you to act and be and so on. So I think there's a huge... There can be, right? Like, it depends, though. Like, it depends on the parents, and definitely depends on the parents more than the kids. But there are difficulties, you know? Like, kids have a huge expectation from their parents, and sometimes it definitely depletes them. It definitely, like, causes them a lot of anxiety and depression and feel like they are not going to live up to their parents' expectation. But the parents also, because they face so much struggle and obstacles to come here, they feel like, we've done this all for you. Now, you know what I mean? It's your job to make sure that you get your education and get a good job and make good money and so on and so forth, you know? So there's a huge disconnect, but that's also why we want to be, like, we're, our organization, our hope is that we bring those two different generations together so that they can understand each other. You know, they have different backgrounds. The parents grew up back home with so many struggles and difficulties going through refugee camps and so on, while the kids might not have faced the struggles that their parents faced, you know. And the kids face a lot of struggles here, you know. They're African and an American society with a lot of systematic issues that they might not... The parents might not even understand, you know what I'm saying? So there's definitely difficulties, but we hope that with time and energy, it can change. Yeah.
What important things should incoming refugees, African Americans, remember about their heritage or history?
You know, like, I think one of the greatest things that I'm learning is that to know where you're going, you have to know where you come from, you know? It just makes life a lot easier, because I think a lot of the times, especially as immigrants, we tend to assimilate so much to the country, like the hosting country, and we forget who we are. And I think one of the things to connect you is your history, your heritage, your ancestors, and who you are, because all those people that went through all whatever they went through have brought you to this point. So history is, I mean, the food you eat, the clothing, the tradition, all those things definitely make up a part of who you are, because ultimately you might have been raised here, you might have even been born here, but at the end of the day, your ancestors, you know, come from a different place with such a deep, amazing culture, you know. I mean, America is a great place, but there's so many countries with such great history, and it's just so important. And I think one of actually the hardest thing for young people, like even for myself when I was young, was keeping my traditions and keeping, you know, my background prevalent to me, you know. But I mean, by the grace of God, obviously, like, I did, but I wouldn't be who I was today if it wasn't for those things, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Is there anything we haven't covered that you would like to talk about?
Girl, we covered everything.
And do you have any final words or advice for future generations?
Yeah, I do actually. Learn how to cook your own food. And the other thing is, I think learning about your history, honestly, like, I feel like preserving your history, because one day, like, I'll have kids and I won't be around and they'll have kids, and I want them to know their history and their heritage is so important. Like, it's so, so important. And everyone should know their history and where they come from, you know? You shouldn't just be American. American is not a heritage, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, I guess, no, it can be. I'm sorry if you're not a Native American, you know? So you should always know where you come from. America is a place of refuge, a place that people end up coming for one way or another, you know what I mean? A lot of the times, most people, like, you know, Caucasians, for example, are not Caucasians. They're different ethnicities, but we look at them and say, oh, it's just a white person, but they might be Irish, and they might be from Russia or German and France, but they don't know their heritage. They've assimilated to just being white, but white is just a color, you know? Knowing your ethnicity and where you come from is definitely important. Sorry, I ramble. Yeah, sorry. That's it.
Thank you for allowing me to interview
you. Of course. Of course. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.